Good morning, Tucson. Happy Thursday to you, July 23rd. Welcome into the 1030 The Voice studios. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, for this hour of Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. Looking forward to kicking our hour off with a conversation with a friend and a local author, Dave Drum, about his new book, Peace Talks. And then at the bottom of the hour, I want to talk about what happens if we don't open schools in the fall, August 17th, as planned. I don't have an agenda for that conversation, but I genuinely want your help because I haven't put the pieces together yet. And I'll tell you what I feel like I'm missing in this whole picture, and you can school me up, 790-2040. And then I also want to talk about what I think was a huge opportunity that was missed here in our city during COVID-19 and what it means for the community. So that's what we're going to talk about today. But without further ado, I want to welcome in, again, local author Dave Drum to the air. Dave, good to see you on the phones. How are you?
I'm doing great. Honored to be with you today, Zach.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation about the book that you just released. Our country is seriously divided politically. And many of us feel this division personally, you write. In your new book, Peace Talks, you explore seven factors contributing to our political division and providing a path forward. Always a relevant conversation and one that I want to have as much as possible this election year here on Tipping Point. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do in Tucson. And I really want to ask, what led you to write this book in the first place?
Thanks, Zach. I am a native of Tucson, the real deal. I was born here, went to U of A, got a degree in engineering, then went to seminary and came back and served as a pastor of a church on the west side of town, Community of Hope, for 21 years. And then for the last 9 years, my full-time job has been working for Greater Unity within the Christian community. I worked with Fort Tucson for a while and started J7 back in October of 2018. So married, four kids, a child, and another one on the way, and love Tucson and eager to see what we can do to help make it an even better place.
Yeah, and that's a great starting off point to, again, my curiosity of, you know, writing a book is not something you wake up today and finish tomorrow. It's a process. You started this, you know, many, many, many months ago, and it just released here in our community and where all good books are sold online and in person. But what caused you to write this book? What were you seeing in our community that pushed you there?
Well, as someone who's full-time job, and it feels like a calling for me, is to work for Greater Unity. There's no place where that's needed more than when it comes to politics, it would seem to me. So if something is true, it needs to be true everywhere. And the place where it's most being challenged or threatened is the place that we need to focus. And so I've been struck for a long time. One of the issues that we talk about in the book, I didn't know this when I started researching the book. My son actually helped me learn this, that the part of the brain accessed by political issues is literally the fight or flight part of our brain. Mm. And so no wonder fight or flight are our most common reactions to political topics. And I believe it doesn't have to be that way, but we have to be conscious about it and be intentional, or we will default to fight or flight.
You know, Dave, I feel like our community, our culture today is really conditioned to this division. I think there's a lot of people that think that this is just the way it is. Like, this is politics. It's designed to be divisive. Is designed to tear people apart. The other side is completely wrong. Dave Drum, this is just the way it is. Why would you write this woo-woo book to make us all feel better in 2020? And I ask that sort of rhetorically. You're in the weeds. You're working on these ways of how do we come together and actually build a great community together. What are the practical things that are positive results if we can overcome some of this political division and unrest that really tears us apart?
Well, one of the analogies that I work on a little bit in the book is if we're on a plane, blowing up the other side of the aisle is a patently bad idea, because if we blow up the other side of the aisle, the whole plane goes down. And I don't know that it's a whole lot different in the country. I have no problem whatsoever with there being differences in the political parties. But at some point, and some research suggests that we can maybe even pinpoint a little bit when maybe that started to switch between two different ideas vying for what the country as a whole is going to deem best for the country, to a switch in viewpoint where the other side is the enemy to be defeated and nothing good could possibly come from the other side. And so it, instead of what's best for the country, the goal has switched to what's going to get our side more votes in the next election. And the cost of that is really serious, I think. So we've got to find a different way forward. And I would argue that especially those of us who have an affinity for Jesus ought to be able to find some ways. It takes something bigger than the gap to bridge the gap. And Jesus is bigger than the political gap. I totally believe that and take a couple of chapters to flesh out that argument right in the middle of the book.
Yeah, that's exactly how I wanted to finish this first segment. We're talking with Dave Drum, a local author here in Tucson. He wrote a book called Peace Talks, and you call it, the subtitle is The Good News of Jesus in a Donkey Elephant War. I want to ask you how churches and faith communities have specifically fed into this division, which I know is a very difficult conversation to have. But is this book, we have a wide variety of our listening audience. I wanted to have you on to talk about how do we overcome political division. And you'll talk about in the next segment seven factors that contribute to that and what we do to move forward. Is this book just for those who maybe are a part of a church or hold a certain faith, or have you found that people of a variety of backgrounds have picked up this book to figure out what's going on and how do we improve?
Hopefully the latter. I tried to write it very clearly. I'm unapologetically a follower of Jesus, so that comes through in the book, and I'm not trying to hide that in any way. I put it in the title. But on the other hand, unless a person is just vehemently opposed to Jesus, not who Jesus is portrayed by society or even sometimes by the church, but if a person can't stand the thought of reading or hearing anything about Jesus, then they're not going to like the book. But whether they identify as Christian or not doesn't matter to me. If we're willing to allow Jesus to be another speaker into the situation, then I think that there would be some valuable tools and insights that the book could help with.
Dave Drum, my final question is to kind of close us out. And again, I'm really looking forward to this second segment to get into the weeds with you. But I think we've seen it's been very felt for probably a number of decades that there has been an aspect of Christianity, of Christendom, an aspect of churches that have been very conservative, evangelical, very on the kind of right wing of politics. But we've also have a number of churches and denominations that are firmly and just as loudly on the progressive and left side of politics. Yep. The church is not immune to this division, part of the reason why you wrote this book. How has faith, maybe accidentally or maybe on purpose, become a wedge, a kind of alongside of this conversation of politics?
I've got one chapter in the book called Identity Theft, where I'm pretty autobiographical and I talk about ways in which, for myself, My primary identity has been replaced by secondary identities. And I would argue that we do that all the time with politics, whether on the right or the left. For somebody who claims to be a follower of Christ, that's got to be a primary identity over and above donkey allegiance or elephant allegiance. And yet we get that backwards all the time. And things that we would never say to another person in any other context, we don't even bat an eye to say it politically. Mm. And so it just gets vicious. And you can read that from self-named followers of Christ on social media just as well as from anybody else. And that's part of the problem that I'm trying to address and hoping that we can make a difference.
Yeah, when we come back from a short break here, Dave Drum, again, author here locally of Peace Talks, you outlined seven factors that you've seen contribute to our division. Again, you've been in the weeds, specifically with faith-based leaders on the left and the right. You've seen this in real live action. Seven factors that contribute to our division overall as Americans and providing a path forward so that each of us can learn to become a voice of peace, not just a pacifist voice, but a voice of peace that can get things done and kind of restore our communities and restore our country. No doubt we all want to do that. Let's go to a quick break. When we come back, that's where we'll go with Dave Drum here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. The Tucson Museum of Art is preparing to reopen after COVID-related closures and are excited to introduce in July 2020 the new Kasser Family Wing. The new wing will allow visitors to experience 3,000 plus years of Latin American history at the Tucson Museum of Art, where you can explore works of art from ancient to contemporary and one of the only exhibits in the country like it. TMA is excited to welcome visitors under new safety protocols. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to plan your visit. 25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to decibelcoffeeworks.com for more info. What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about, and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Friday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
Tucson, good morning. Welcome back. Our country is seriously divided politically, and many of us feel this division personally. In Peace Talks, we explore seven factors contributing to our division, as well as providing a path forward so that each of us can learn to become a voice of peace. The book is especially designed for those with an affinity for Jesus, but is accessible to anyone, writes David Drum, local author and the author of Peace Talks, our guest today. With the accessibility to anyone component, Dave Drum, I want to get into in this segment the seven factors that you outline in the book that are contributing to our division in our country right now. Again, your context is in the Christian aspect of faith communities, often the ground zero of multiple layers of division. What are those seven factors that you highlight in the book?
So I'll just list them off, and then we can decide where we want to go. Psychology, sociology, technology, media. There's a foreign influence factor that's well documented. And then our Western worldview contributes to the problem, as does this issue of identity or misplaced identity, identity theft. So those are the seven factors that I look at.
Yeah, you know, you have been very effective in the last number of years of being a part of an effort to, for example, bring African-American pastors and Hispanic pastors and Anglo pastors together to kind of hash out some of these big issues that do divide us that never get talked about in the public square in this way. Yep. If you had to look at that group, for example, what are maybe one or two factors that popped up most pronounced in your work?
Well, I'll just echo what you just said, because I couldn't have written this book 10 years ago. I was part of the problem where my identity, my political identity was largely just unexamined. And I just defaulted to political talking points because the news media that I heard was the talking points of my side of the debate. And it was through developing very close friendships with African-American and Latino pastors whose political starting point was different than mine, where I began to have some of my blind spots revealed and realized, no, there isn't just one perspective to these issues. My party would try to convince me of that, but that's just not true. And if I could listen, because I care about the person talking, I've built a relationship with them, then I can hear things that I would just reject out of hand if it was coming from the so-called enemy news station. So there's a lot there that we could dive into more deeply, but I can't overstate how significant in my own life it has been to build deep friendships that cross the political divide, but that cross the racial divide as well.
Yeah, you know, Dave, it's always been encouraging when I get to be in those situations where, you know, maybe we share a meal or a cup of coffee, yeah, and we care for each other as people. But I think the hang up for a lot of people listening, certainly for me, is what does that look like past conversation? You know, at the end of the day, I think you can still have great people on two sides of the, you know, across each other from the table who care about each other as people and care enough to listen. But at the end of the day, there's still values driven, hopefully, right? They're still driven by what they value, sure, deeply. What does it look like to have that give and take where we start to overcome some of those seven divisive factors to actually get things done? Is it possible anymore to actually move past conversation and get things done in a way that is unifying, peaceful, and practical?
Well, great question. One of the concerns that I tried to come back to several points in the book is that I was afraid that perhaps I was going to be heard as saying we should not be people of conviction. And in fact, that's absolutely wrong. That's not what I believe the solution is. I don't believe we should hold to our convictions less tightly. We should examine them, but I don't think the answer is to be spineless. Rather, I think it's to maybe add some convictions to our list of passions that weren't there before. So I think we tend to be strong on the convictions that our party advocates, but we just ignore the ones that the other side advocates. If we could all be passionate about more of them, crossing the aisle, particularly from a faith standpoint that Jesus is passionate about, that the scriptures are passionate about. Racial issues shouldn't be shouldn't be owned by one half of the political spectrum of our country. The whole country is going to have to come together to solve some of those issues. Poverty, same thing. Unborn, on and on. There's any number of them that there's good reasons for that people of goodwill would want to support some of those things, and we just need to get better at listening. So while it does take more than just conversation, it has to start with conversation and listening, or else we stay in our echo chambers, and the only voice we hear sounds like our own.
We've got about 2.5 minutes, Dave, before we get booted off, whether we like it or not. And usually it's like it or not. you know, you wrote the book for those, especially who have, as you say, an affinity for Jesus, but is accessible to anyone. What is your call to action to those of faith and those even not of faith? How do we manage the next 4 or 5 months of what's going to be a very contentious time? What's the path forward?
Well, I talk a little bit about what bad strategy it is to dehumanize and demonize the opposition. We're never going to convince anyone when we start off by dehumanizing them and demonizing them. That's just a recipe for disaster. And yet that seems to be the modus operandi all the time. So the first part of being part of the solution is to stop being part of the problem. We've got to stop that and call it out in our own spheres of influence. It's just not okay to behave some of the ways that we've behaved. And we ought to be able to call one another out on that. And then I've got a couple of chapters where I talk about intentionally building relationships that cross the political aisle, having some humility in that process, asking questions and making statements like, help me understand what is important to you when you go to the ballot box. Just help me understand that. And then to look for peacemakers. I am of the belief that might be our single most important criterion when we look for who we're going to vote for, is who are people of peace, who will treat the other side respectfully instead of demonizing them. That may be what we need more than anything else as we move forward into the future. And I think if more people were passionate about that, we would find more candidates that operated that way.
Mm. Dave Drum, there's so many directions we could even go from there, but that's a great place to stop. Thank you for taking the time to write this book and for your voice in our community and helping to point to a better way. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Great to be with you again, Zach.
Dave Drum, author of Peace Talks. Thank you so much. We'll be right back after the break. The Tucson Museum of Art is preparing to reopen after COVID-related closures and are excited to introduce in July 2020 the new Kasser Family Wing. The new wing will allow visitors to experience 3,000 plus years of Latin American history at the Tucson Museum of Art, where you can explore works of art from ancient to contemporary and one of the only exhibits in the country like it. TMA is excited to welcome visitors under new safety protocols. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to plan your visit. What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about, and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more. WhyLoveWhereILive.com. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many local businesses right now, their physical location at the MSA Annex is dealing with changes to hours and operation, but I'm so proud of how they've pivoted to online sales and a virtual website tour of their brand new space so you can see what they're up to. Go to WhyLoveWhereILive.com right now and buy local to invest in the people that keep our economy going. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA. Tucson, welcome on back to the show. Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. Tucson, if you're like me and my family, COVID-19 has made us take a hard look at our finances and financial planning. If that's you also, give my friends at MassMutual a call, 274-3749. They can help you navigate through these challenging times, integrate your insurance and investments with a purpose and a plan, and create a holistic financial strategy that works for you. Call them at 274-3749 to get started. My last conversation with Tucson author Dave Drum about his new book, Peace Talks, addressing the political divisions that pop up in all areas of our community, especially here in 2020. He writes from the context of the Christian community, especially churches, but it's an accessible book for everyone. We took that conversation down to the wire, fit as much as possible in that I didn't get to say then, so I'll say it now, where you can get the book. It's called Peace Talks. You can get it at Amazon and on his website, J17Ministries.org, J17Ministries.org. And our conversation reminded me that of something that I read this week in Vox, no less, which is a center-left publication. There is this sense in our community today that the way that you win in politics is by whipping up your side or whipping up the other side. And I brought this up with Dave Drum as well, that this just seems like the new normal. And I hate that phrase. I know it's used in other ways, but it's almost like a frog in the kettle, right? You warm it up a few degrees at a time and a few degrees at a time and a few degrees at a time. And over time, you don't realize that this hot temperature raised environment is not normal, right? By the time you get to that point, it's just, you know, does a fish know that it's in water, right? You just don't realize that what you're in is so toxic that soon it just feels like this is the way that it is. And I read this quote in this part of an article in Vox that I thought was relevant before we change conversations here. Mobilization is often the flip side of polarization. When party activists on either side are sharply divided by ideology and demography, what excites your side will be the very thing that unnerves the other side. Studies of House elections show this dynamic in action. Ideologically extreme candidates perform worse than moderates because they drive up turnout on the other side, which to me is what 2020 has been all about. And I think because of the loudest voices on both sides of the aisle, right? They take up the Twitter oxygen, they take up the media oxygen, they are the most upfront, they are the most out loud. Data shows that that may seem expedient and productive in the short run. And there are some clear examples where it works. But mobilization is the flip side of polarization. What excites your side will be the very thing that unnerves the other side, right? And this is not an endorsement or anything like this, but this, you know, this article was in context of kind of observing the Biden campaign. You're not seeing, you know, the article was about how a lot of Democrats wanted the anti-Trump in the terms of they wanted their own version of Trump. They wanted someone that could clap back, slap down, respond really heavy, go head to head on Twitter. You will remember Hillary Clinton, at least her staff, was hilarious on Twitter in 2016. I mean, very up to date on current terms and ways to use Twitter. And a lot of Democrats are like, you know what? Not really digging the fact that Biden's not really anywhere to be seen. Not the candidate, not the Messiah they were hoping for. But this one observation is that this is the Biden strategy. Be quiet, Don't slap back. Slice into the Trump coalition of older, whiter voters that Democrats lost in 2016. Double down on the strategy that mobilization is often the flip side of polarization. We'll see if it works. We won't know. And anything that you see today is going to be different in September or in October. Most political strategists go, why are you asking me to predict now? It's July 23rd, 2020. What do we know now? Right? There's 3 months to go. Remember 2016? You know, was it before, right before the second? I think it was right before the second presidential debate is when the whole, was it Billy Bush, the locker room talk situation. I mean, this stuff is real time, right up until the election. So to make predictions now is going to be very difficult. But it just made me think of this conversation with Dave Drum. Mobilization is the flip side of polarization. There is, not only a good community reason for turning the temperature down. There's a good political reason to turn the temperature down. Polarization and polarizers don't realize that they are mobilizing the other side and mobilizing people who you're not going to hear about on woke Twitter and social media and in the news, who are going to quietly vote for some level of calm and moderation. And so when I believe in that, and when I come across that way on the air, it's because I deeply believe that the majority of our communities are calm, are centered, and want good policy. We hear the 1% on each side, and we have become convinced that the loudest fringes are reality. They may be what fills our news and social media, but they are not the reality of our community members. They are not the people who vote, who work, who care for our community. To a large degree. They are a piece of it, but not the whole of it. And we can't forget that. And I think there's a referendum on that philosophy, to be quite honest with you, here in 2020. And we'll see what happens. I want to start the conversation with you, and I need your help, to be quite honest, 790-2040. Started to read some interesting dynamics around schools reopening in the fall, specifically online education, at least in TUSD, will start August 10th. And as of today, the goalposts are going to move on this. Like, it's 99% chance it's going to move on this. We've started to see some hints from the state level. Supposedly, in-person education is supposed to start on August 17th. I don't think it's going to. I just don't see that happening. That's not a political statement on my part. I'm just objectively looking at what I'm seeing and hearing. I have a hard time seeing schools physically reopening across the board August 17th. But here's what I'm struggling with, and I'll just give you my stream of consciousness, and you can give me a call, 790-2040. By the way, if you are a parent here in a school district locally in the Tucson metro area, I'd love for you to call in and let me know, are you going to send your children back to school? And what are the factors behind your decision? I'd love to hear from you, 790-2040. What I'm trying to figure out, the pieces that aren't coming together for me, is that in our communities, schools are so much more than education, right? And we can philosophize about how we got there and whether that's the right thing. But schools have become such a social safety net, right? That's the reality. That's the pragmatism of the situation. It's a place where for students to eat when they otherwise couldn't. There's social and mental care in other ways that they could never get. And so many working families in our community who are working 2 to 4 jobs just to get by right around the poverty level, because that is Tucson's story right now, need schools as safe places for their children to go. The physicalness of being in school is so much more than just the education component. And I don't have a political agenda here in what I'm going to say. I just am looking at August 17th. I'm looking at unemployment benefits going away right by the end of the month. I'm looking at what I think is a majority of Tucson that is going to need to have their children back in a safe physical setting by, you know, as soon as possible. And I struggle to try and figure out what happens if that doesn't exist. And I think as I'm watching, right, I've seen on Facebook a lot of conversations of someone with a level of influence, a lot of followers will say, hey, are you going to send your children back to school? And to a comment, I saw people say, no, I'm not going to send my children back to school. I've seen things like protests, right? People get in their cars and they go around to school and protest and say, don't open up until it's safe. And those protests are happening at 4 p.m. on a workday. And I sit back and I think to myself, I think the people that I'm seeing on Facebook who are making the decision not to send their children back to school are families who can afford to, in a variety of ways, not. Either they can afford financially not to, or they work from home, and so they can, it's not ideal, but they can manage their children from home. I think the folks who can get in their cars and protest schools reopening are at 4 p.m. in the afternoon are families who obviously don't have to be at work at that time, who can afford to get in their car and drive around and say don't open schools. I think that there is a quieter percentage of our community who doesn't have the luxury to make that call. And I'm not setting up here a, you know, haves versus have-nots conversation. What I'm saying is I would continue to validate what I think TUSD is doing. I would say that TUSD is saying, look, we're offering a 5-day physical experience sooner than later because we're required to at this point. I think that there are going to be families who can afford to, again, not just financially, but time, work, all of that, can afford to opt out and go fully online. So TUSD says we will provide an online experience and a physical experience. It's going to be the same experience, just in different ways. A lot of families are going to opt out and do fully online, and more power to them. Like, I'm not making a values distinction here. I don't have a political agenda. If you don't want to send your kids to school and you can afford not to, do what's best for you. But in my mind, is there going to be a balance of families who won't do that? Does that create a safer space for families who need their kids in a physical location to do exactly that? Like, is it going to work itself out where there will be natural social distance because there will be some who opt out and some who need it? And if that's the case, I would continue to advocate for what TUSD is doing. I think we need a safe, distanced, physical space to send our children. I've heard some people say, well, the state needs to basically fund families to do childcare until schools open up and get a number of kids and families together and do childcare. And my thought to that is, what's the difference between that and a socially distanced school setting? Like, it's a genuine question. 790-2040. I don't have an agenda here. I'm genuinely wondering, why would we spend money in that direction if we already have those spaces available? And if we're going to have a number of families opting out, what is wrong with the TUSD plan to have a simultaneous online in-person option? Some will stay completely online, keep their kids out for months, and some will jump right in and have to have their kids in school. I think it is really concerning not to have school start. I think school has to start. I worry about the impact. We saw this in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. You push back school a number of months, you are impacting years of development. The other thing, and I'll go to a break on this, I saw today, it was in the New York Times morning briefing. There are families saying, you know what? We're going to homeschool. We're going to bring, and not just, you know, in our family, we're going to create a pod. We're going to get together with 3 or 4 families in this time, and we're going to co-homeschool, right? We're going to co-educate. We're going to get a private tutor. We're going to bring educators into our house. And I look at that and I go, will those families come back, right? When school does reopen, will those families say, okay, well, now school is open in places where it's not open. We've co-homeschooled for 4 months. We're going to send our kids back. Or will they like that experience so much they'll keep doing it? Or will they keep having a private tutor? And if we're looking at this thing socioeconomically, for those who have private tutoring, you're continuing, I think, to widen the gap in a way between those who can afford to maintain education right now and those who can't by not opening schools. But I think the longer this goes on, if I'm a school district and if I'm forcing families to figure out other ways to educate, if those kids don't come back to class, my funding's impacted. Don't forget, funding is impacted by butts in seats. I'm not talking about the federal funding. I'm talking about over time. Butts in seats equals funding. And I think if you keep education from not happening, market forces are going to provide other options. So I know I'm throwing a lot out there. Again, I don't have a political agenda, 790-2040. I'm genuinely asking, how does this all work? I keep coming back to, I think TUSD's got a great plan. And I think they deserve to be congratulated. They've got a great plan. And I think they should stick to it. I think we've got to figure out a way to move forward in this scenario. And I'd like to think that parents making a choice to do online education will balance it out for those who have to have their kids in school. Help me out here. 790-2040. I'm getting the eyeball from Tom. I got to go to my last break. When we come back, we'll get to your calls on this and finish the conversation. Don't go away. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. Tucson, if you're like me and my family, COVID-19 has made us take a hard look at our finances and financial planning. If that's you too, give my friends at MassMutual a call at 274-3749. They can help you navigate through these challenging times, integrate your insurance and investments with a purpose and a plan, and create a holistic financial strategy that works for you. Call them at 274-3749 to get started. 25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA. Tucson, welcome back on the air, 1030 The Voice, 790-2040. Give me a call. We're talking about restarting schools next month, and I just kind of came into it with, I'm trying to put all the pieces together and lots of question marks, and started that conversation in the last segment. Let's go to our phone lines. Doug is on line two. Doug, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? What do you think?
Good morning, Jack. You said a few things that are interesting to comment on. One is, you know, the idea of a moderate candidate, having more potential in the general election and so on. Like Ducey is basically a moderate. The people on my side on the hard right don't like him, think that he's been weak, and not opening up or even shutting down the state being a wrong decision. And then on the left, they hate him, so the more he's done to accommodate the mayor of Phoenix, the mayor of Tucson, the more they dislike him. But you get to the education issue, he's getting a lot of pressure from Katie Hoffman and from the unions, the teachers' unions. And so what I've heard is that he's going to delay until September 1st or maybe even October 1st. And then a lot of the things that you talked about are going to kick in, because we're seeing, a couple of our clients are Christian schools, Desert Christian and Palo Verde Christian, and they're seeing an increase in enrollment because parents are choosing to put their kids elsewhere, or they'll homeschool, or they'll find online options and other things, charter schools where they feel more comfortable. So you could see TUSD and some of these other districts losing 20%, 30% of their kids and that will directly impact them because they get paid by the number of kids that they have. It's per student. So
right.
This could be very interesting.
Yep. No, I completely agree. And I think once you get people out of the public school system, them coming back is less likely. And I think the majority of TUSD, just socioeconomically, culturally, so on and so forth, need to be in a safe education space for reasons that go beyond education. I think there's so many factors to weigh here. There is the health safety of it for sure. And it's tough because other countries that have opened up schools have not opened at a time where we are still in the U.S. where cases are going up. So we're really in uncharted territory. And I you know, I'm not here to bash the governor, Doug, but I think I'm not sure that the governor's problem is that he's a moderate. I think the problem is he's waited too long to make a decision on everything because he's trying to make everybody happy. And I think he's delegated a lot of the work more than making a firm decision and sticking with it. And I kind of see that locally, too. I think the mayor is trying to walk a fine line on a lot of different issues, and it's making a lot of different people on both sides of the aisle really frustrated. And so I think it's more just he's been too slow on everything, and in whatever direction he's chosen to go, it's just been too little too late. I think that's the problem. Do you agree?
Well, I actually personally like what he's done. I think he's been, you know, I'll use the term again, moderate. You know, he's listened to the different people. He's, and maybe that makes him a little slower to do things, but, you know, he's trying to be more reasoned in his approach. And so that's going to make people upset on either side. I mean, there's people, I've talked to people that said we should shut down the economy for 8 months. And I go, well, how are people going to live? Well, you guarantee people 80% of their income and stuff like that. And I go, well, who's going to pay for that? I mean, it's just crazy stuff. And the other side, we've got people that say we shouldn't have shut down at all. So
yeah.
That's, I think, where we're at. It's a difficult decision.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree, Doug. Doug, thank you for your call. I always appreciate it.
Thanks, Zach.
Yeah, give me a call. I got time for my one or two more calls, 790-2040. And yeah, interesting call there. I think this is tough. I just had a listener message in. This is always bigger than just our child, our person, our education. And I think, you know, what Doug brought up is interesting I think the thing I'm trying to wrap my mind around is if our education system can stand still for a period of time, the rest of the world can't. And I guess what I was trying to bring up in this last half of the hour is all the different things that are going to happen, whether schools reopen or not. And I know schools will be open online, but online only works for a certain type of person. And what happens to the rest? And you know, appreciated Doug's latest update on what he's hearing from the governor's office, and it kind of affirms what continues to be my gut hunch, is August 17th is not the in-person opening date, not even close. And we've seen some of that from Superintendent Hoffman, not Dustin, I always mess that up. I'm talking the Kathy variety. Always get that wrong. I think we've started to see some rumblings here this week that show that in person will be pushed out later quite a bit. That does it for us today. Tucson ticking under a minute here. Tomorrow we're going to wrap up with a local race. We're going to talk about Brian Radford. He's a Democrat running in the District 1 race against Rex Scott in that primary. One of those two will face up against one of the four Republicans running in that same district in the Republican primary. And that will wrap up our coverage of the District 1 race this month before the August primary election there, the first week of August. So that's how we'll wrap up tomorrow. Also, Workforce Pivots, Financial Fridays is our usual way to wrap up the week. Looking forward to it. We made it to Friday, Tucson. Tune back in 9 a.m. on Friday here on Tipping Point. 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Take care and stay healthy.